From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. 90 minutes before accused mass murderer Anders Breivik began his killing spree in Norway on July 22nd, he emailed his intentions to more than 1,000 people with a 1,500-page manifesto attached. He's hardly the first accused murderer to publicly declare and justify his intent, and it's clear why. Such missives are irresistible to journalists looking for any explanation. And yet, when they're as lengthy as Breivik's or the Unabomber's, they're often not fully read. This is Bill O'Reilly on Monday.
Now on Sunday, the New York Times headlined, "Has horrors emerged? Norway charges Christian extremist." A number of other news organizations like the LA Times and Reuters also played up the Christian angle. But Breivik is not a Christian. That's impossible. No one believing in Jesus commits mass murder.
Jeff Charlotte is a Dartmouth professor who frequently writes about religion and is one of what is presumably a very small number of people who took the weekend to read 1,500 pages of Breivik's thoughts. Charlotte says that he was struck by just how American Breivik's work is and also by how much it's been mischaracterized. For instance, there's that issue of Breivik's Christianity.
At one point he says, "I'm not particularly religious." And so people who are doing sort of find and search in this massive document find that and say, oh, good, he's not Christian. And then they don't read the pages and pages and pages where he sort of slowly talks about his evolution. And by the end of the manifesto, he is really quoting scripture a lot more and talking about his ideal of how a Christian state should be run. He becomes more and more invested in faith, first as a kind of a weaponized thing, that faith is going to prepare him through what he calls Bible battle verses, but then goes deeper and deeper. And to put it in kind of New Agey terms, he sees this as a faith journey. This is a 1,500-page story of the development of the mind of a killer, and he's not the same person at the end of the story that he is at the beginning.
You've compared it to a piece of literature. Specifically, you've compared it to Moby Dick.
Moby Dick, of course, starts with this long passage of quotations from other writers about the whale. There's a little bit of a similarity here. The whale for Breivik is Islam, which he sees as vast and menacing and dangerous and beyond comprehension, yet he must keep trying. So now he'll turn to Robert Spencer, a prominent anti-Islamic writer. And now he'll turn to the poet Ted Hughes, who never wrote a thing against Islam, as far as I know. Now he's going to turn to Mark Twain. Now he's going to turn to Rich Lowry, a prominent conservative writer for the National Review, drawing in all these sources into this sort of the whirlpool of this manifesto in which some of these voices get drowned and become part of his. Now he's talking about poetry. Now he's talking about the Knights Templar. And now he's talking about investment strategies to finance your project, or here's some really good exercises to prepare you, or it's really important for a Christian warrior to be prepared, and this is a thankless task. So you have to do nice things for yourself. Go for a meditative walk. He says, I like smoothies. It's really good before you're about to undertake a mission to have like a nice smoothie, listen to some nice music. Treat yourself right. You can tell the writer is aware of the comic element of that. And again, that gets it into the sort of the literary qualities of creating a character. And he discusses that. He talks about marketing himself. At one point he says, I'm not only a one-man army, I'm a one-man marketing agency. He says, you have to have professional photographs of yourself taken. You should try and be good-looking if you can, but it doesn't matter. You have to give people an identity, and that will give your manifesto more power. He expects a manifesto to outlast him. Unfortunately, I think he's probably right.
So let's talk about the ways in which you argue both his style is American and his content.
He talks about his favorite destinations, and he decides number one is Budapest, but it seems kind of dutiful. What he really wants to talk about is Vegas, all the Red Bulls and vodkas he drank. And then he quotes other European conservative writers talking about how they have to take these sort of refresher trips to America, partly because America's more conservative, and they also see it as having maintained its Christian identity. Again and again and again, when he wants to explain his story, he turns to America. What's the justification for Norway fighting back against the Muslim horde? The U.S. Declaration of Independence.
Did you undertake this because you felt like Breivik was being improperly characterized?
Yeah, I guess a little bit. I mean, I was sort of surprised by know, sort of this question, is he religious or not? And there's sort of a very limited idea that being religious means you go to church on Sundays and that you are pious and that your religion is expressed emotionally. That was frustrating to me. And there was also, he must be a madman. And he may well be. I'm not a psychologist, but he also did have political ideas. It comes out of a political world. He takes this political logic further than others. And those others vigorously condemn that step that he took. But in the same way as the Unabomber, it's silly to say that the Unabomber had nothing to do with radical environmentalism. He did something that those activists would never, ever do. But he came out of that set of ideas. And there seems to be in the press always a sort of desire to, is he a madman, or is he, and if he's not a madman, then he must be part of a political organization. Well, maybe sort of somewhere in between there. Are these American conservatives to blame? No. Well, if they're not to blame, then how are they in any way relevant? There's that great spectrum of ideas and the way ideas interact in between those two poles.
J.D. Salinger did not cause Mark David Chapman to kill John Lennon. On the other hand, the character in Catcher in the Rye begins with a profound cynicism about humanity, a kind of loathing of the hypocrisy of the adults that he knows. Do you know where I'm going with this?
We're going back to the old conservative saying, ideas have consequences. And that's true. But it's always important to remember Breivik pulled the trigger. These people didn't. There's a spectrum of sources. I feel very confident in saying Mark Twain bears no responsibility for what Breivik did. Although Thomas Jefferson, who I adore and revere, that unfortunate quote about watering the tree of liberty with blood has been used time and time again to justify political violence. And it's used in this, and Breivik says, when you're on trial, make sure that you remind your judge, whatever country you're in, that Thomas Jefferson is our guy. And does that mean Thomas Jefferson shouldn't have said that? No, but it does mean there is that relationship. And again, you get someone like Robert Spencer, who is presenting this reading of Islam as saying, Islam is dedicated to your destruction. The anti-Islamic movement, it's, I think, in this sort of interesting moment right now where it has amped up its fear of the Muslim threat from their perspective to so great that it's at this boiling point. Well, what do you do about it? You say that the cause is lost. You say that Europe has fallen. What do you do about it? And then you say, but of course, we believe in nonviolence. And it reminds me of a Belgian politician, I believe, speaking to the BBC the other day. And he is from a right-wing party and horrified by this violence. And the BBC reporter says, well, then why do you distribute knives to your supporters? They're nonviolent knives. Maybe that's the paradox that I think best explains the moment and that nature of that relationship. There's a lot of nonviolent knives going around out there right now. And you do have to ask yourself what happens when someone decides the knife can actually be used.
Jeff, thank you very much.
Thanks. Good to be with you again.
Jeff Charlotte is author of Sweet Heaven When I Die, Faith, Faithlessness, and the Country in Between.